Happy Aloha Friday, everyone. This is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us for the conversation on this 20th of June. Today, we're diving into show archives to Hanaho interviews with local businesses that have been part of the landscape through multiple generations. We take you back to our conversation with Hilo's HPM Building Supply as they were preparing to celebrate their 100th birthday. We sat down with President and CEO of ABC Stores, Paul Kosasa, back in 2021, as the company was navigating the tough economic times of the COVID pandemic. Chennai Wall talks about Foodland celebrating its 75th year in the islands, looking back at the Sullivan family business and looking forward to the future. And City Mill CEO Stephen Ie shared his perspective at the helm of one of the oldest family businesses.
Looking for cool, unique experiences and events happening across our Hawaiian Islands? Let your new HPR besties show you the way. Introducing HPR's Social Club newsletter. Every Wednesday, get the latest happenings straight to your inbox. Sign up at hawaiipublicradio.org/socialclub.
Support for HPR comes from Costco Air Conditioning and Refrigeration, featuring Daikin Air Conditioning Systems. Listing of contractors installing Daikin products, that's D-A-I-K-I-N, at CostcoHawaii.com.
You're tuned to the conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. It's been more than a century since the Hilo Building Supply Store first opened its doors. Back in 2019, we sat down with HPM Building Supply during its 98th anniversary as the company embarked on a new venture to provide modular homes. Jason Fujimoto runs the family business, and he reflected on the long history of a community helping community and a new housing venture called Hale Plus.
My great-great-grandfather, Kametaro Fujimoto, he was a contractor himself and also had an entrepreneurial spirit. And back in the day, obviously wasn't very satisfied with his supply options and decided to start HPM. So HPM actually stands for Hawaii Planing Mill. And that's where we actually started off as a business that actually planed cans of timbers from the Pacific Northwest into construction-grade framing lumber.
This is a new venture for the company.
Indeed, a very new venture, but something that really leverages all of the different capabilities that we've built over our 98 history. So something that we're very proud of and obviously came out of the lava flow event from last year. Really leverages our supply chain, so all of our vendor relationships, our manufacturing capabilities, our design capabilities, to really kind of make Hale Plus what it is at this moment in time.
So share with our listeners what you were able to do for the lava evacuees, because for folks, on the neighbor islands, on the other islands, they may not have seen what you put up there.
Sure. Right around the lava flow event, there was immediate and urgent need for temporary shelters. And that's where we had an opportunity to partner with Hope Services, a community organization in Pahoa, and a contractor named Gilbert Aguinaldo, and they had a vision for basically putting up these, I guess what you call micro shelters, on the Hope Services land right in Pahoa in a very accelerated time frame. So really, this was an amazing effort because in 30 days, we were able to clear land, put in infrastructure, and leverage HPM's manufacturing ability to assemble and erect 20 micro shelters and then one community center, all within that 30-day time frame, which in Hawaii is a remarkable feat. And obviously, we had a lot of support from state government as well as our local and county government.
So how are you going to make this work then for these modular homes to be available across the state?
Yeah, so these were micro shelters, and the conversation quickly evolved to, okay, so how do we support more permanent shelters for for our community. The whole design development and concept behind Holly Plus, which really kind of revolves around the three tenets of, number one, right, it had to be affordable. Number two, how can we make it expandable or modular so a family can, you know, start off based on their financial needs and their family size, right, at one point in time, but have the option of expanding it. And then lastly, how can it also be transportable? And these are three tenets that we really focused our design development on over the last 10 to 12 months.
So what's your plan then for actually getting the manufacturing done here?
So right now, we actually are pretty much complete with our first prototypes. We call it Gen 2. And it's actually on a couple of these customized trailers that we manufactured and designed, and we're actually testing them right now. This prototype is actually already spoken for, so it will go to Hope Services. And right after this, we're going to begin production of our second prototype, which will eventually become a model home sales office at our facility. So right now, we're doing this, you know, kind of as we speak, and kind of in parallel, we're also working on an expansion plan for our 13-acre manufacturing facility here in KL, where we can actually have a dedicated covered plant, you know, and equipment and space to really scale and hopefully meet the demand in the future. You know, this for us is really, it's a big evolution of our business in terms of the final end product. But again, it's not something that we're having to start from scratch, right? We already have, because we do, you know, hardware retailing, we do pro lumber commodity distribution. We also have facilities, land, and we do manufacturing already of building components, you know, trusses, wall panels, metal roofing, pre-hung doors. You know, this Holly Plus initiative really kind of combines all of these different capabilities into creating a finished product in the factory. Yeah, we are investing capital. We are investing in additional resource and expertise, but it's not like we're a standalone, you know, factory-built housing business that has to rely, you know, solely on that for its success now and into the future.
So what's your timetable?
For the next maybe 6 to 8 months, you know, we really want to focus our current production capacity on really helping community organizations, you know, like Hope Services, you know, with their different needs, whether it's helping homeless, creating elderly housing, whether it's teacher housing, ag housing. You know, there's many different needs right now out there where people would benefit from, again, a very affordable, quick, modular, transportable solution. Once we, depending on how that goes and how long that takes, you know, right now we're kind of issuing a broad release date for the public of 2020. Our current facility, we have a vacant 5-acre adjacent parcel that we already own that we can dedicate to this expansion.
So what do you think your great-grandfather would say if he knew you were taking it to this level?
That's a really good question. I think he would be proud. You know, I think when you look at our roots, our DNA of HPM as a company, it kind of goes back to the community and doing whatever we can to help and be an important part of our community. And I think this solution truly does provide an opportunity and an alternative to affordable housing and really meeting an underserved market and really helping Hawaii in a time when I think we are truly at a crossroads and we need to stop the population decline, you know, 2 years in a row, and really keep our local community here in Hawaii. That's really the end goal. So I'm not sure exactly what he would say, but I'm sure, you know, he'd be happy that this falls in line with, you know, the philosophy and the heart of the company.
That's terrific that, you know, you're a Big Island company and you have these deep roots. And again, like you said, working to help keeping the community together.
Yeah, that's why we're here. So we wouldn't be around without our community and without our customers.
That was Jason Fujimoto, President and CEO of HPM Building Supply, celebrating 98 years in the community. Since we first aired this interview, Holly Plus has become a staple in local affordable housing projects and even disaster recovery. In 2023, HPM partnered with Hope Services Hawaii to develop modular homes for a rental housing community for seniors living in the Puna District on Hawaii Island. And after the 2023 Lahaina wildfires, HPM Building Supply constructed 16 modular homes as part of the La'iku Temporary Housing Project. The focus of our show today, we revisit stories about local businesses that have been the stalwarts of our community through multiple generations. Paul Kosasa is president and CEO of ABC Stores. At the end of 2021, Hawaii's economic landscape was uncertain. COVID cases were rising again, nationally and locally. Inflation was at its highest point in nearly 40 years, and economic recovery was difficult locally. Kosasa came to our studios and reflected on the daunting task of navigating the tough economic waters. His parents, Sydney and Minnie, started the business in 1949 as a drugstore in Kaimuki. The first ABC store in Waikiki opened in the mid-1960s. Paul became CEO in 1999. This interview aired back in December 2021, and recently we've seen another moment of economic uncertainty, and we're reminded of this interview for Kosasa's candor in tough times. HPR's Bill Dorman started the interview with a simple question that's a bit complicated to answer. How's business?
Business is okay. You know, it's sort of a neutral answer. It's not bad, but it's not good either. But 2021, since June, has been a pretty good recovery. Back in August, though, when the governor had made his announcement to the world that, you know, don't come.
Right.
They heeded that message, so it did slow down quite a bit. It's recovered a bit, especially since the restrictions have been lifted in early December. I think that was a positive point. And so visitors are slowly coming back, and locals too, since locals have to buy things from us too. So we're fortunate right now that it's okay. But compared to prior years, 2019, 2018, 2017, we're pretty far off from that.
Strategically, you're always playing a longer game. When you look at the tourism market here, and it's domestic, it's international as well, what do you see? How do you plan?
It's pretty difficult to plan. And that's one of the things that we're working on right now is our budgeting. And it's sort of like whatever playbook we used in the past, we just got to throw it away and start over. Because this is a new world. We are fortunate that a lot of domestic visitors are coming from the U.S. and Canada. But we are sorely missing the Asian visitors. As you know, and reported, you know, Asian visitors spend more per capita than the westbound tourists. And so a lot of businesses that are dependent upon the Asian visitor have suffered or are still suffering. We are very good at balancing the mix between Asian and domestic visitors. So the commodities and products that we sell attract both. And so right now, we just lean more toward the domestic visitors. And that's why we are, you know, surviving right now.
So when you look at cost of living in Hawaii going higher, again, from a strategic standpoint, how do you plan for the future?
You have to do the best that you can. You know, there's a labor shortage, as you mentioned earlier. So our labor costs have gone up, but intentionally too, because, you know, people have to make a living here in high cost of Hawaii. So we increased our wages for our people, which shrinks our margins even further. We do a little bit more promotions to draw more traffic to get our sales up and consequently our profits. But at the same time, the real estate valuations are going up too. I think you just have to do more with less.
How's your staffing situation, by the way?
We lost quite a few people as a result of the pandemic. Many, I think, moved away from Hawaii. We've managed to get most of our employees back, but we are still short maybe 100 or 200 people to be fully staffed. The situation now, though, is because our sales, our volume is still on the softer side, it's not as urgent as it was maybe in the summertime. But going forward, as we recover, I do anticipate struggles in covering our stores. Incidentally, we did close permanently some stores. It's just the pandemic has just really affected everyone's business and our suppliers. So some of our suppliers are still struggling or they gave up. They just gave up their business. So we're looking for alternatives. So when you accumulate all of that, how do you plan for 2022, 2023? You just keep working harder and hopefully that you keep your fingers crossed that things will get better.
On staffing, the minimum wage is likely to come back as a discussion point at the legislature this next session. How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, it's due to raise the minimum wage. In fact, my position was that it should have been enacted earlier. Because if we did that, then I think the gradual increases of minimum wages is a lot easier to handle rather than a big jump. Maybe this legislative session, they'll try to make up for the prior sessions, I think.
You mentioned you raised wages yourself, not because of the law or anything, but because of market forces.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's the market. You know, if you need people, then you're going to have to attract them. Younger people, they live, many live paycheck to paycheck, and they need a decent income. And benefits are expensive too. Healthcare, insurance is going up. Gas prices are high, transportation. So I'm not alone in this.
Yeah, exactly.
I think all the businesses are cognizant of the fact that it's a tightening of the market. You know?
How are you looking at Hawaii's commercial real estate market right now?
I'm optimistic. I think it's a little hot still. Anecdotally, I mean, if you start seeing more empty storefronts, landlords will adjust. And I think they are beginning to realize that. Our locations where we shut down was really dependent on the Asian visitors, the Japanese in particular. Mm-hmm. So those locations are, there's no traffic there. So if there's no traffic, we close the store. Commercial real estate, I think, is it's probably just needs a reset right now. My opinion, it's still a little bit high, but time will tell if there's further adjustments. What I don't know is foreign investment, whether that may prop up the pricing so that it doesn't adjust. But we'll see. My optimism is because, as you know, many restaurants had closed,
right.
But recently many restaurants have reopened. And so I'm optimistic that that's a good sign that there's people that are confident about the market. And the more restaurants that are open, it sends a signal to the market and the community that, hey, we're open for business, coming down and eat.
Are you seeing foreign money behave differently than Hawaii money, than mainland money? I mean, are those three different buckets?
That's a good question. I've never thought of money as behaving differently.
People behind the money, I should say.
Yeah, I think, you know, Hawaii is a victim of its own beauty and success, right? People want to live here. People want to invest here to a point where, you know, is there too much tourism? Is there over-tourism, which affects our natural resources and beauty? So there has to be a balance. And I think Hawaii Tourism Authority under John DeFries is approaching it in a very logical, sensible way that there is controlled growth. And I hope he's successful at that because I think he's got some really good ideas to manage the growth. And it prospers everyone.
What excites you about ideas of managing that growth of tourism? Or what policies or approaches do you find interesting, exciting?
Well, off the top of my head, I think fees that are charged to certain places like Hanauma Bay, as long as those fees are earmarked for the care and nurturing of the bay, and that's siphoned off to rail or something, I think that's appropriate because we're not alone. I think you go to other visitor destinations around the world, there are surcharges or fees really to maintain the visitor plan. I'm chair of the Waikiki Business Improvement District Association, and our mission is to make sure Waikiki is clean and safe and have ambassadors that greet our visitors. And that is funded primarily by the visitor industry through property tax.
How is Waikiki doing these days?
I think Waikiki is doing fine.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the hotels have lower occupancies probably in the 40s, 50s, and 60s right now. In a way, it gives Waikiki a chance to kind of regroup and get cleaned up a little bit better. That's pretty much almost done already. So we're ready for visitors to come back. And I think the amount of hotel rooms that we have right now is good. I know there's a couple more projects that are coming up. And I think that Waikiki has the capacity to manage those additional rooms. And really is getting people back employed again. And hopefully we come out of this better and higher quality.
You have a lot of stores outside Hawaii as well. Is there anything in terms of the stores outside Hawaii that tell you anything either more broadly on your business perspective or about Hawaii and business perspective?
Well, we have stores in Las Vegas, and we have stores in Guam and in Saipan. I'll address Guam and Saipan. They're still closed for tourism. So they're still suffering as if we were back in 2020. Hmm. Las Vegas, on the other hand, is opened up very quickly earlier and pretty much back to normal. And so Hawaii will probably be a more measured recovery than Las Vegas. Las Vegas is Las Vegas. And I think Hawaii is, we have to be a little more sensitive to the recovery. And if we, you know, pay attention to it properly, I think we can have a nice recovery for everybody.
When you look at the future of Hawaii business on a broader scale, what gets you excited and what, if not, keeps you up at night? What concerns you?
For businesses, you know, we started off as a mom and pop business, and we were fortunate and lucky to grow. This pandemic had affected a lot of mom and pop businesses. Some have closed, but some have remained open. And I think for me, one of the attractive things about Hawaii and visiting Hawaii are the mom and pop businesses. So yes, while I'd like them to shop at ABC stores, I also would like them to enjoy the businesses, the small businesses throughout Oahu and the neighbor islands that have a character and a cultural feeling of Hawaii. And as long as they survive, I think that's great for the economy. In contrast, I worry about certain developments that are big box. And it's quite evident on Oahu. And I'm not going to mention names, but, you know, there is a lot of pavement with a lot of parking. And I'm not sure if that's kind of what Hawaii is about. And so I think we have to kind of look at ourselves to see what we want out of our Hawaii. And, you know, small businesses, generally speaking, donate more to charity and community. I don't have evidence on that, but I think they do because they're in this community and they support nonprofits a lot more. And so because of that, I think we should support our small businesses and visit them, shop with them, eat at their restaurants. They'll remember your name. That's what I like.
Paul Casasa, President and CEO of ABC Stores. Thanks for coming in, Paul.
Sure thing.
That was Paul Kosasa, president and CEO of ABC Stores, with HPR News Director Bill Dorman. Their conversation originally aired in December of 2021. Coming up, we check in with the CEO of Hawaii's most popular grocery chain, and we hear from the head of City Mill, a family-run business since 1899. Stick around. The Conversation's local business Hanaho Show will be right back.
This Saturday, Hawaii Public Radio's Live from the Atherton presents DeShannon Higa's Quad Pod. Enjoy live jazz performances with HPR every Saturday in June. Learn more at hprtickets.org. Sponsored by HMSA.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from PAR Hawaii, committed to meeting the energy needs of Hawaii and supporting community nonprofit organizations across the islands. Learn more at parhawaii.com.
You're listening to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Back in 2023, local grocery chain Foodland commemorated its 75th anniversary. The first location was opened in May of 1948 in Oahu's Market City Shopping Center by the Sullivan family. It was the first supermarket to open in Hawaii and is the only locally owned statewide grocery store in Hawaii. Today, it has 29 stores and employs nearly 3,500 people. The Conversation's Russell Subiono sat down with Foodland Chair and CEO Janai Wall to reflect on the business started by her parents and grandparents.
What do you think they would say if someone traveled back in time to 1948 and told them they would still be going strong in 2023?
Well, I think they would say, really? And I think that it would have been a dream of theirs that the business would continue all these years. I imagine my mother clapping her hands and saying, oh, that's so exciting, makes me so proud. They were so proud of opening Hawaii's first supermarket, and they would tell us the story over and over again about how they were able to get the location. And then, you know, on the first day, they didn't know what to expect. And there was a huge crowd of people, and they were so busy, they had to close the doors periodically to restock the shelves. And, you know, when I think about them seeing Foodland today, I think they would be amazed that so many things have changed in the grocery store. But I hope they'd be happy to see that a lot of things that were important to them have stayed the same.
You had mentioned a little bit earlier that there has been some big changes in the industry in the last 75 years. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen?
Well, it's funny, you know, I've talked to people recently that have confessed to me that their first job was at Foodland. And what they remember is that, you know, you had to memorize prices and you had to memorize what was on ad and all these things, which of course we don't have to do today because we have scanning and it's so much easier for the cashiers. We can change prices more readily. I think another big change to me is prepared food. And so we didn't sell poke then. It's a big thing for us. Salt and vinegar wings are really popular at Foodland. And while my father had
even from the earliest days, had a central kitchen, which we have today. I think the things they were making were probably different than what we offer in our stores today. And more customers, I think, than ever before are too busy or don't have the same interest in cooking as they did perhaps in my parents' and grandparents' generation. So we've had to adjust to ensure that we continue to meet their needs.
And you're running a company, you have to be adaptable, adjustable. And I know your company has seen its share of good times, its share of hard times. You're celebrating this milestone at a time where we're seeing the lingering effects of the pandemic drive up the cost of groceries.
Right.
I know that we've seen prices come down a little bit, but how does Foodland find that balance between prices that are affordable and continuing to run a profitable business?
You know, I think it's been a challenge for not only supermarkets, but retailers in general across the country. And many of us are seeing margin compression like we haven't seen in a long time. You know, our costs from eggs to a whole lot of other things have gone through the roof. And we are trying to balance being able to, you know, we can't lose money, of course, right, on everything we're selling if we don't take prices up, but we're trying to balance that so that we can still serve the community in a way that is fair to them.
How much of the balance is also local, selling local products? How does being local or promoting local, how does that factor into the business model?
So I think local is important in many ways. The product that we get from local farmers is so much fresher. The quality is great. Sometimes it's a little more expensive. Sometimes it's not. It just depends. But we believe it's really important to support other local businesses and vendors. And what's really exciting is how many options there are now to buy local. I think there are a lot more today than there have been in the past in every area of the store. For a long time, it was farmers and produce, but now we're seeing it in other places. And I think that's great for our customers. I think it's really great for Hawaii too.
And kind of looking ahead to the future, the short-term future, with the downtown Honolulu Walmart closing, does Foodland see an opportunity to step in and be the grocery store for the downtown community?
You know, we haven't thought about downtown. As we've looked at it previously, I think one of the hard things is that so many of the people that work there are, you know, you have to do business 5 days a week, which mm-hmm. is a little bit challenging for us because the weekends, there are fewer people there. I think parking is a big, big issue for us. And we know that the stores where our parking is not as accessible is a challenge as well. And, you know, at this point, I would say we have our hands full managing the locations we have. And you may know we opened several during the pandemic. And so we're adjusting and digesting those because the startup cost for a new store and ramping up is always challenging. We're always looking for new locations where it makes sense for us and makes sense for the community. And at the same time, we also this year really want to spend some time reinvesting in our older stores because some of them have, you know, gotten a little tired over time, and we want to make sure we update them and give them a fresh new look.
And then looking ahead to the long-term future, what kind of plans does Foodland have for the next 25 years? What might we see at Foodland's 100th birthday?
That's a good question. And you know what I hope you will see is that you come to a store where you feel welcome, that you can find the things you want. I can't predict what those things will be, but my sense is
that we'll have more prepared food than we do now. I hope we have more local offerings than we do now, because I hope that there will be more and more suppliers and vendors coming right out of Hawaii. But I hope you'll also feel like it was the food line you grew up with, that this is a place you'd like to come to find things that reflect Hawaii and the taste we have in Hawaii very well, and that you feel like, oh, you're shopping with friends and family because our employees treat you with aloha.
As a business that was started locally and continues to be locally owned, what are a couple of the most important lessons that Foodland has learned over the last 75 years that other local businesses could learn from?
Well, I think one thing is that you have to be good at what you do. You can't count on the fact that people, or you shouldn't count on the fact that people are just going to shop with you because you're local. That's not enough. I think you have to listen to your customers. You have to respond to what they want. You have to be innovative and working your hardest to be a place that they want to visit and they want to shop and where they can meet their needs. I think the other thing is that we have learned that there are unique things about being local that we are able to celebrate and honor in our stores. We think better than other people, and that's an advantage for us. And so it's about celebrating our local roots, but also honoring our customers by finding new ways to serve them better and bring exciting new products to them.
Can you share a few cool things that you're doing for the 75th anniversary celebration?
Oh, yes. We actually, as part of our anniversary celebration, we are working with several local vendors, and they have come up with Foodland anniversary products. So you were talking about Sensei Farms from Lanai has come up with a Maika'i greens mix special just for Foodland. Sun Noodle came up with a dry min just for Foodland. And Uncle's Ice Cream is another one that we all just tried recently. And it's a Foodland anniversary lychee ice cream with chocolate chip cookie on the outside. And, you know, we have more coming, including, well, I'll let you be surprised, but there are some fun ones coming, including our first ever beer.
Thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed talking to you. You're a lot of fun to talk to.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That was Foodland's chair and CEO, Janai Wall, talking with HPR's Russell Subiono back in 2023 about what the supermarket chain was doing to celebrate its 75th year in business. Hardware store City Mill has been around for 125 years, and it's one of the oldest local businesses with the lights still on. Consider some of the local companies that closed up shop recently. Peterson's Egg Farm, Hailey's Hawaiian Food, and Sarah's Surf and Shore. Char Hut Soot was one of the oldest small businesses in Chinatown before shutting down during the pandemic. Many lament they never got to say goodbye and thank you for their many years in business. Stephen Ie and his sister Carol are the third generation of their family working to keep City Mill running and their ohana of employees working.
First of all, let me just talk about family businesses. We've been in business for 125 years. I am the third generation, which is pretty young compared to other 125 years where they may be on the fourth or fifth generation. It's just that my grandfather and my father, they all started late. So that's why we're only on the third generation. But I'm happy to be part of the third generation. Now a fourth generation is starting. And, you know, part of our thoughts as we were growing up, my sister and I, as well as my father, that we're stewards of this business. We're stewards for future generations, not only for our family, but for the people who work for us. At our 100th birthday, I brought all the living retired City Mill employees, and I thanked them. I said, because of you, because you worked hard, because you made things happen, we made it to 100 years. It's not just the family members. And when we have our celebration for 125th this year, again, I will invite all the living employees, and I will thank them. Because without their hard work, without making things happen, without giving good service, we would have never made it to 125th. So it is truly a team effort. It's not just the family, you know, making things happen. Without people, which are members of our community, it doesn't happen. And again, it takes capital to continue a business. It takes capital to hire more people. I think, again, I'm not sure exactly the numbers, but I believe nationally, the creators of new jobs are small businesses. It's not the Fortune 500. It's not the super large companies. It's the small business collectively who create more jobs than any other group. And so to keep this small group healthy, we have to make sure that they're financially able to be able to continue through generations, especially family businesses. Again, we looked at ourselves as stewards of the business. Our salaries are not outrageous. Actually, it's actually quite low compared to what we could get. But we want to make sure that our, not only our employees, so employees are important, very important, but our customers. Think of it, without our services, what would our community do? Where would they go? We're not the only ones, but I believe, at least for City Mill, we're very convenient to a lot of our customers. And so by perpetuating small businesses, it helps members of our community be employed, members of our community getting products and services that they need.
Well, you know, I think of on my street, I had a neighbor who worked for your company until just recently when he passed. I have neighbors on the other side who work for Foodland, you know, other longtime family companies as well. And so, like I said, it's a neighborhood thing where I see the connections in our community reflected on my street. But that ad did catch my eye, because we have lost many small businesses, and it does make you stop and think, you know, what if these local family companies were to fade away?
Right. And some people say, oh, this is just a loophole for the rich. If you really look at a lot of the companies, they're not flaunting some kind of wealth. They're not, you know, you don't see them driving in $500,000 cars. But what they do is they give back to the community. If you look at a lot of the givings, we don't participate in the, I believe, a competitor of yours has the most philanthropic businesses in Hawaii. We don't compete in that because we know that if we showed our numbers, we'd be just become a target for all the nonprofits, which we are already, because we do give. But again, we give a lot of both monies with in-kind contributions and various things that help our community. And you're going to see, not that the nationals do not give. I can't say what the national big boxes, the national companies, who are, how much they give. But I do believe that a lot of the support for our community comes from small businesses, particularly family businesses, because they have friends, they have neighbors, they have relatives who are in the community who says, hey, Stephen, can you? And of course we're going to support our neighbor. Of course we're going to help, you know, organizations with where they're in the arts or sports or various nonprofits, you know, health and human services. Of course we're going to help. That's where we live. We have nowhere to go. We only have here. Like for us, we are domiciled just in Hawaii. We don't have places that we can. You hear some of these larger companies, not necessarily in Hawaii, but they're closing up in XYZ city, but they have other places. Yeah. For us, this is it. We have no other place to go. And so we have to make a go here. We have to make it happen to support our employees and our community, our customers. Because if we close here, we don't have like operations on the mainland. They go, oh, we'll just close in Hawaii because it's too tough.
Talk about the competition that you've seen in this market, you know, with the big box stores coming in.
Well, the big box stores, people will know about Home Depot and Lowe's, and they've been here for several decades. But we got another competitor who's just Amazon. They're building on 14 acres out near Sand Island. They're building another one out in the Leeward Coast. And, you know, the instantaneous, we've all, or many of us have bought from Amazon. It's easy. They deliver. That's the competitor. But even more so, we compete with everybody. And people think, oh, you compete against Home Depot and Lowe's. No, we don't. We compete against everybody. If you buy $100 at Restaurant X, that's $100 you're not going to spend for us. If you're going to buy $50 at big box, let's say like a Costco or Sam's Club, or actually that's pretty low probably. People spend a lot more money there. But let's say they spend $200 at a Costco or a Sam's Club, that's $200 they're not going to spend anywhere else. And so we compete against everybody. You yourself know that you have a budget for your household. And as you look at it, you decide, Kathy, who's going to win your pocketbook. You go, okay, I'm going to spend going out with my friends for dinner this weekend or next week. Or that means maybe the clothing side, you can say, I can just wait. Maybe it's a new accessory for your car. Maybe, you know, whatever it is, let's take a look at the other side of the coin. Some of the things that are necessary, whether it's like gas, $5 a gallon, we're competing against them because everybody says, I got to fill my car up. So you fill it up for $50 or $75, and that's $50 or $75 you're not going to spend anywhere else because you have a limited amount of cash. I don't know if it's answering your question, but I'm saying small business, especially family business, are very important to our community. And what this bill does is it helps preserve the small family businesses. And I consider ourselves small. Yes, we are larger here in Hawaii, and we've been here a long time, but we're still small, I mean, in the eyes of the government overall and everything else.
And talk about the legacy that your family has, you know, because, I mean, City Mill, you were a rice mill.
Exactly. One of the things people don't realize, starting in 1899, we started as a rice mill. And people go, really? You know, well, we kept on evolving. We've been at the pineapples. We had something called the Honolulu Fruit Company, where we're actually harvesting pineapples and processing them. At one time, my grandfather dabbled in tobacco, but that was years ago, probably in the 30s or 20s. We've been into various things. We're wholesale lumber. We just got into retail home improvements in the mid-50s. So about half of our life we've been in as a retailer. But what it does, it pulls a family reunion where you may not know somebody, but he goes, hey, Kathy Cruz, I'm a Cruz. Hey, so whose father are you? Whose mother are you? How did you? And it creates a way of pulling this group together closer. And that's what I believe family businesses do too, because I've had people, hey, Stephen, yeah, my father worked there. It was great. I'm glad he was very happy. Or we shopped there as a little boy and little girl. My father used to take us there. We looked at all this stuff on Saturday mornings. And it's something to talk about, which is necessary in a community. I think too much with the cell phones, with social media, we're not talking to each other anymore. We're not as friendly because everything's behind a technological instrument, a computer, a phone, whatever it may be. But I think it brings something, a talking point, like a family reunion, that there's something to talk about. Even now, I mean, even businesses I don't know, but we talk, hey, remember Leaky Leaky Drive-In? Yeah, God, I used to go there. It was great. You used to go Leaky Leaky too? Yeah, how about Coco's? Yeah, Coco's in the corner of Kalakaua. God, we used to go there at 2 in the morning having hot fried Sundays. You too? Oh, wow. So some of the people that have created memories, and unfortunately, there's a sadness in all this because I think you're old enough to know some of those places, or at least
yes.
Heard of Coco's and Leaky Leaky Drive-In. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, but it's sort of, you know, there's a place across from the old stadium. I'm getting myself older and older, Chunky's. And you talk about the old times, and they're gone for whatever reason. But we can't keep on burdening them with another reason not to be around.
So it's the connections that we make in our community with those family businesses.
And the sadness that when you talk about it, you says, remember, so, oh, yeah, oh, too bad they're not here anymore. It's not like, yay. Right, I'm glad, right. You know, XYZ's out of business. Boy, those guys are, you know, a lot of times you just hear about the old times. Family businesses are needed for our community. It's not just for the family. It's for employees who work for us, who are constituents of many of these, all these people, ourselves, the family, customers, employees. That's what makes a community.
That was Stephen I.E. of City Mill, a family-owned business since 1899. Our interview with him aired in April of last year. That is it for this Aloha Friday. Call our talkback line and give us some feedback. That's 808-792-8217 or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can listen back to our shows on the conversation page of our HBR website or on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and D.W. Gibson, with support from Savannah Harriman-Pote and the HPR Digital team. Our Backyard Quiz theme, written for us by John DeMello, theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday and pick up the conversation.
Like a long, lonely street, I keep running towards a dream. Moving on, moving on, moving on.
Like a branch on a tree, I keep reaching to be free. Moving on, moving on.